and it's KVZ Arts Now on KVZR, Arts and Entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, we'll hear from Matt Bissonette, who, along with his brother Greg and Andy Timmons, make up the core of the Redcoats, with elements of rock, funk, and fusion. We'll hear about and from their first two releases, fittingly, Redcoats 1 and Redcoats 2. The Redcoats, spelled with two D's, yep. So you know you're serious. Let's talk about how these guys started coming together. I know it was pretty much you and Greg, and then kind of Mike comes along, Andy catches your ear. Tell me about the slow build of eventual the five-piece, I suppose.
Yeah, well, Greg and I have always loved having bands. You know, we had a band called the Mustard Seeds in the 90s, where it was just kind of like King's X kind of music and vocals, Beatles kind of stuff. And we did that for a while, and it was really fun and kind of learned the ropes about that stuff. And we always wanted to get another band together eventually down the road. And it kind of happened by accident. I was out on the road with Elton in 2018, I think, and went through Dallas. And my buddy Mike, who's the co-producer and mixer and does everything with the Redcoats, he was playing at a club with Andy. And I've always heard about Andy, and I knew about his playing, but I never met him before. I went to the small club, and as soon as I saw Andy, I was like, what's going on with this guy? He's ridiculous, and he's just very musical and just a great guy. And I just kind of grabbed him at the end of the night, and I go, we're going to do something together. And he's looking at me, oh, okay, yeah, right, sure. So I wrote a song. It was the first song on the first record called Only the Messenger. Sent him the tracks, and he played on it, and Mike and Greg and I played on it, and Wally, the keyboard player. And it just sounded really good. And I was like, well, let's just keep going. And it just kind of turned into this thing. And then by the time 8 songs were done, we put out a record. And during COVID, which everybody, we had to do files over the computer and stuff like that. But we kind of were fortunate enough to make it sound like we were all in the room at the same time. So you get done with that one. And then Mike called me and goes, we got to do another one, man. I'm like, oh, are you kidding me, man? That's a lot of stuff. So kind of started from scratch, did the same thing, kind of wrote the songs and sent everybody, you know, my little demos and stuff like that. And the great thing about this band is that everybody is just an amazing player and amazing people. So every time I would write something, they would just make it 10 times better. That's the key of writing, I think, like this, is just to let everybody do what they do, you know. And I remember years ago producing one of my brother's solo records, and Steve I was playing guitar, and Greg was going, you're the producer, man. He's playing a solo. You should be in there telling him what you like and stuff. And that was one of our only fights we got into in years, was that I'm going, Greg, nobody goes in and tells Steve I how to play a solo. I mean, a smart producer is going to let everybody bring what they do and make it better. So that's basically what the Redcoats is. It's 5-6 different individuals just going nuts, playing everything that we've wanted to play for years, but we've been playing with other people, playing their music, and this is the chance that we get to go and express ourselves and not worry about if we're going to make the radio. We're not going to be Taylor Swift. We're not going to be
you know,
the Foo Fighters.
Good.
It's going to be what it is, and just to grab that and be proud of that and honor the music that we grew up with. It's the jazz guys, the fusion guys, the rock guys. It's kind of all thrown into one thing, so that's what that is.
Oh, without a doubt, and with all due respect to Taylor Swift or whomever, when you have the pedigree that comes from you guys, I mean, between David Lee Roth and Rick Springfield to Danger Danger and Don Henley, Santana's in there somewhere, I know, Edgar Winter, Jean-Luc Ponty, oh my God, there's so many different influences from folks past coming together for the Redcoats. You mentioned Elton John. Just really quickly, did you by chance cross paths with John Jorgensen when he was providing a lot of the color string work with Elton?
John and I are good friends. Davey couldn't make a tour. I knew John with all his work that he did before, but yeah, John would come out and cover for Davey sometimes, and we got to be really good friends. And yeah, John's an amazing guy. You know John?
Yeah, he lives in the same town that I do, but I mean, I know him through other circumstances, but yeah, he's a really, really cool guy, humble, and again, just one of those monster players that it's an experience to be able to watch while he plays and going
from. Yeah, I remember being out on the road when he was with us in Europe and we were just finishing mixing the first Rickroad record. And I remember playing it for him on the plane, and he's pretty particular and pretty hard on music because he's just, you know, an amazing guy. Mm-hmm. And he goes, this is really good. You know, so I was like, all right, maybe we're not crazy. You know, I remember getting his endorsement meant a lot to me. So, yeah, what a talented guy. I got some good stories on that guy. I'll tell you some other time.
Well, let me see. I think it was while you're with Elton John that you came up with term Redcoats, I think.
Yeah, just kind of, you know, putting a name, unless you have a name in your head already for something, it's like writing a song. Do you write the words first or the music first? It's always different. So with this band, I just started writing stuff, and then I always thought the phrase, like if we're playing in someplace, the Redcoats are coming, would be pretty amazing to be able to say that. And it's also a spoof on our good friend Jimmy Haslip's band, the Yellow Jackets, or the Redcoats. So I just talked to Jimmy the other day and asked him if it was okay if we called ourselves that. So he said, absolutely. So, yeah, it is an honorage of Yellow Jackets, and it just kind of came out. And then, of course, you know, you do the YouTube search, and there's already a band called The Reds. There's a million bands with every name. It's just hard to find a name, so that's why we have two Ds.
Two Ds.
So we are the Red Dead Dead Coats.
That's what we've been saying, joking, just privately back and forth. Oh, would it not be just too perfect to have Paul Revere and the Raiders open for you guys, saying the Redcoats are coming?
Oh, right? That would be the catch me out. That would catch me out right there. Come on.
Okay.
I'm only the messenger.
The Redcoats have a couple of singles out also, and particularly Really, Really. And there's a video out there, without completely digesting it or, you know, doing the whole you're soaking in it now kind of thing. It's very much a children's fantasy starring a unicorn. So,
a unicorn, yes.
Tell me
you're
all about
soaking in it, Madge.
I told you we were the same.
Yeah,
age.
Well, that video was done by Davey Johnston. Elton.
There's Elton.
Guitar player, his son, Tam, did that. And a couple other videos, too. There's a song, Just Give Me the News, that Tam did also. We were just kind of doing performance videos and just goofy things, you know, because we're not like 20 years old where everyone wants to look at the band because they're so young. I mean, we're all a bunch of older guys and we're over that whole thing. So, yeah, there's a unicorn walking around and he's singing the songs, and it's kind of freaky, actually, how that unicorn is in that thing. I've had many people ask me about the meaning of that unicorn, and I have no idea. I mean, how do you define a unicorn? So, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, it's enough just to say Elton John's guitarist's son, and that spawns several conversations right there.
Exactly.
Now, there was also a tune from the first album, Nick Beef.
Nick Beef.
Now this one, here are my notes on it. A happy, fun tune, somewhere between a funk jam and an interstitial or montage moment, with a video reminiscent of the first Tron movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, you should be a movie critic.
That's yeah.
Pretty amazing. Nick Beef was the famous, when I was in Dallas with Mike Medina, we were driving around getting barbecue, and he took me to Nick Beef's gravesite. Do you know the story about Nick Beef?
No, I don't. I just know that Nick Beef are the only two words spoken in this otherwise instrumental jam.
Yeah, right. Where's the beef? Yeah, Nick Beef, nobody knows where the truth and fiction begins with this story, but he took me to Lee Harvey Oswald's gravestone in Fort Worth. And right next to it is Nick Beef. If you go there, there's another tombstone right next to it that says Nick Beef. And if you look online, you can read the whole story about Nick Beef and what the whole story is. But I just thought that was a hilarious name for a song. Much like on the second record, we have a song called Tilt-A-Whirl.
Yes.
Before we went to master it, we changed the name because it used to be Agnes Moorhead from Bewitched, I think, was the show.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But I'm thinking, that's dating ourselves so much with these names. But some of these names, just Agnes Moorhead, some young kid's not going to know what that is, but I wrote a song called Rose Marie from the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah.
And then they start realizing when you're about to print that record, you go, well, no one's not going to know what that is, so let's change it. But yeah, Nick Beef, we kind of just honored a little bit. We really don't know the story about him, but it just sounded funny. With instrumental music, you just can kind of put any name on it, I guess.
Let's go to Redcoats 2 now, and starting with the title of the album. Numbering them is just fine. It worked fine for Led Zeppelin, I suppose, their first few albums. But were there any actual titles tossed around for calling the album? Or was it just, this is our second one, Redcoats 2, simple, let's go?
Probably just simple, let's go. The first song on the second record is called Redcoats Stew.
Oh, yeah.
Like a stew, Redcoats Stew. So, you know, and that's what that's called. And that can be either funny or stupid, but we just decided we were just going like, let's just go the Chicago route and just call it Chicago 2. Let's call it Redcoats 2. The funny thing is, Greg and I, when we were in high school, we had a horn band and we played all Chicago music.
Oh.
And when we put the band together, we had these band t-shirts made with the Chicago logo on it, and we actually called ourselves Chicago 2. So we're not too proud to steal from the best. So calling this Redcoats 2 was not a problem.
And man, it took you saying it out loud for me to realize that Redcoat Stew is the same thing as Redcoat Stew.
Exactly.
Oh,
A little play on words there.
Yeah, I was slow on that one for sure. Oh, my God. Well,
well, it's not obvious and it's not deep, but it did happen.
But it's my kind of humor, too, so... Was this one by chance written to be the opener? I mean, like, hey, we need something to make that statement of who and what we are and what this is. Or was it a matter of already having a bunch of tunes recorded and saying, okay, this is the one with which to kick it off?
Well, exactly what this is. When we were growing up, I remember opening up the first Chicago record, the Chicago Transit Authority record, and the first song on the record was called Introduction. Yeah. And it's this amazing song that just introduces the world to Chicago. So back then, you would open up your album cover and you'd go, there's Peter Cetera. I know what he looks like. He's singing this thing. And there's Robert Lamb and there's Terry Kaplan. You used to look at albums and you'd know everybody. And there was this beautiful story of, you know, you could know the band and you see them. And since we're not in that age anymore, everyone's single-driven. Like, I love that one song. And I don't listen to everything else. We just decided to have, like, the first song on the first record is called Redcoat. Mm-hmm. And that just goes from point A to point B about saying, okay, here's the groove. We're playing swing. It starts with a fast swing. It's all the same tempo through the whole song, but every 30 seconds it changes the groove to just kind of show that it is kind of pretty much the radio station when you're just going through the radio station as a kid, hearing all this music that you grew up with that makes you who you are. So the second album, Redcoats 2, is kind of the same thing. It sounds like little Gino Vannelli, huge Gino Vannelli fan, and Weather Report, and
there you go,
all kind of thrown into that first song again, where it just kind of introduces all the players, you know, like, this is Andy, this is Mike playing percussion, Greg gets a drum solo, there's a little bit of vocals, but not totally vocal song. So it's just kind of splitting a lot of differences and a lot of different things just to show the band what they can do in the first song, and then it goes into a pop song or whatever goes from there. So
perfect.
Our main thing is just to keep everybody guessing and just kind of not worry about it being hypnotic and radio worthy of you hold on to everything like it's a pop song. We just wanted to do different things.
Nice. Well, it is one of those things that it is like you listen to this one and you do get the idea of what the band is about and what is going to be coming at you, and not just the instrumentation, but tempo and the shifts of tempo. And it's a great statement. And so besides Redcoat stew. I have to hyper-articulate that now. Thank you, Matt.
Yes. You are such a smart man.
It's a gumbo, and it really is perfect anyway. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Matt Bissonnette, part of the Redcoats, spelled with two Ds. We are exploring a bit of their first album, as well as their second release, fittingly titled Redcoats 2, not to be confused with the opening track, Redcoat Stew. All for me. Despite at one point in this song there's speculation about 40 years in the future, one of the things that I'm very guilty of asking a lot, I'd like to know if this is written about an actual experience, this person really lifting you and opening your eyes and doing it all for you, or is this the type of song written around the idea of such a relationship?
Well, to get candid with you, I mean, please. It actually is a spiritual song about my relationship with Jesus. It's just, not to get heavy on it or anything, but I'm a Christian guy, my brother's a Christian guy, and we just believe that the whole thing about salvation and that we're all sinners and that we've all done stupid stuff and you can't do anything about it now. All you can do is, if there is a God in the universe and if the Bible is true, the basic premise of the whole thing is, I will forgive you of your sins and you don't have to be shameful about it, but something had to be done to cross this barrier, and that's the whole point of Jesus. So it's kind of like you can try and be the best person you can, but at the end of the day, we're all messed up and we're all flawed. So not to get all heavy about it, but that's what that song is about. Jesus died for me. He did something. He was proactive about saving my soul when I die, and that's all that really matters to me. I know that's kind of heavy for a music thing, an interview and stuff like that, but you asked me, so it's kind of, that's exactly what that's about. And at this age of being 63 years old, I don't really hide what I think anymore about that stuff because it drives my whole life. It's very important to me.
Sure.
So the great thing about this band is the guys just say, write whatever you want, you know, say whatever you want. I mean, I love writing songs about love stories. I love writing songs about political stuff or about anything stupid. I've written a million songs that don't mean anything, but this is a very direct song to me and pretty personal. So, but the thing is, like John Lennon said, when they'd ask him, what's this song about? Hit out was, well, what does it mean to you? Hmm. This is a definite, what does it mean to you song too. It doesn't necessarily have to mean what it means to me, what it means to anybody else. So that's how
nice.
I write lyrics, you know, so there's no preachiness or no trying to change the world. It's just saying what I'm thinking.
Nice. It really did. I mean, unless I missed a lot in that tune, I really thought that you were talking about some woman or someone that you were had a relationship with and then 40 years in the future, like, you know, sitting on the porch looking back. And so it really sounded like it was a person. But that's incredible that you can, well, maybe write about something specific, but then bring it back down and generalize it enough so that it can apply to many things. So that's really
right.
Cool.
Well, thanks for saying that, because that's kind of what it is. I mean, those lines are kind of saying the stupid stuff that I've done in my life, that I've hurt people and affected people negatively. I can't do anything besides call them and apologize. And if they forgive me and they're okay, it's still the trajectory of the thing that I did to them might affect them in a bad way for the rest of their lives. And I just feel completely horrible about those things, like we all have done. You know? You could spend your life trying to track down the things you did that you wish you could take back. But in the end, I think God loves us so much that he will forgive you those things as if they never happened, you know. And that's all you can do. I mean, you can't guilt yourself out about things like that. But the song is about things in my life that, you know, in 40 years, I look back, you know, it's like, I can't believe that in 10 years, I'm going to be 73 years old. If I make it that far. It's just time is whipping by so fast that it's time to be pensive about our lives and to look back and say, I can't do anything differently about it, but I can do the right thing for the rest of my life and just try and live a good life and bless the people around me and lift people up and try and be a positive influence. Whether I'm gone tomorrow or whether I'm here for 30 more years, that's how we got to live each day. You know, sounds pretty preachy right now, but
it's, okay.
I think it's kind of the only way to go right now.
That's all right. That's quite wonderful. Another one that you mentioned earlier, Tilt-A-Whirl, and what I wrote down was, oh my God, what a cool tune, okay? This one feels like it maybe not so much written out, but one that came from a jam, maybe even one of those, was anybody recording, please, 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 kind of moments.
Right. That's the song that we were going to call Agnes Moorhead, but then we changed it at the end, and Mike, the co-producer, he always has the knack of going, what can we do to twist this a little bit more? And he goes, can we do something? And then he goes, what about Tilt-A-Whirl? The word Tilt-A-Whirl. So then I just kind of go, well, let me just kind of wrap something on it using the word Tilt-A-Whirl. And it is kind of like a carnival, the song just going on and on. And one of the things we like to do that we did on the first record with a song called Michael Collins is to let Andy on the guitar just go forever on the guitar solo. Because when I first saw him, he was taking these super, super long solos, but he had a way of hitting a pedal halfway through and then it would go to a long delay and he would just be singing with his guitar and it would just didn't seem like it was taking forever, but it was like a long solo. So when I sent him the files for Michael Collins, he was going, do you really want me to play this long? And I go, yeah, just we can always edit it or whatever. So after he played the solo for Michael Collins on the first record, he said, it's 1 second longer than Freebird solo. So it was like, okay, we're in the Guinness Book of World Records. Let's go. You know, so same thing with Tilt-A-Whirl. I just like to wind Andy and Greg up and let them play solos as long as they want, you know, and they both have a way of making it musical and that you don't go enough already. You could always want to hear more. So yeah, Tilt-A-Whirl is kind of like an homage to also David Sanborn, because I originally wrote that song kind of after COVID, and it was going to be a sax, like a David Sanborn melody, and then I played it for Mike, and he goes, we should do this with Andy playing it. So it's a little bit rougher than the original idea of it being like that David Sanborn album as we speak, because Greg and I used to grow our teeth on that thing just listening to that album. So it is more of a jazzy thing, but it is a little bit rockier with Andy playing on it.
Oh, it's got an incredible drive to it, and I think it's because of Tilt-A-Whirl that I maybe have fewer questions on other things because I listened to this one over and over and over again, and so, wow, so it was one thing, and then somebody suggested Tilt-A-Whirl, and then that really shaped the rest of the tune. That is incredible.
Well, it was a last-minute thing. It was right when we were just about done mixing it. You go, what can we do to make it more like a party? Because it starts out with like a party sound. We're all like jerking around on the mic and kind of making it more festive. Because we don't want to be a happy jazz band, or we don't want to be so far that we're not rocking.
So the voices going into it then, this was you guys, we need to do this. So you staged a moment where you could do this, all right, let's go in and see what's going on, or whatever it was.
We did. We were punch drunk. We did.
Nice. Now, this reminds me also that while a lot of the first album had so much of the recording being done separately and then, trading tracks back and forth electronically, how was Redcoats 2 recorded? Some of the tracks, it really wouldn't surprise me if it was indeed recorded live to tape. I mean, for the most part. Was that by chance the case with Tilt-A-Whirl?
No, we did it the same way both times. Greg and I are in Los Angeles, and Ron Pedley, who played some of the songs on keyboard, and Wally lives in Cleveland, and Andy and Mike are in Dallas, so that's the only way we could do this. And we figured out on the first record that we all know each other musically enough to know where we're going with it, so that it sounded like we're in the same room. So I think that if we would have recorded it and it sounded kind of cheesy and kind of like formatted, and you could tell that it was an internet recording, I think we wouldn't even have put it out. But when we heard the mixes and the interplay between the guys, I don't think it would be much different if we were in a room. I don't know. That's what we wanted to do, is just make it sound like we're looking at each other in the same building. But that's just not the way that it is anymore. I mean, space-wise, we're all in different places. And sometimes it's even better to do it this way, because you can kind of hone in on things in your studio. And our rule was just make it like it's on the edge of falling apart and then pull it back. You know, it's like that Seinfeld joke when he goes to the drugstore and he goes, "I got a bad headache." And he goes, "You ever notice there's like Bufferin, maximum relief, you know, Bear, extra strength relief?" He goes, "When I have a headache, I go to the pharmacist and I say, give me what's going to kill me and just back it off a bit." That's kind of how we're doing it. Just go to the edge and then pull it back just enough so people don't have a brain hemorrhage.
Nice. I'll be quoting that to some up-and-coming musician. They'll really have to wrap their head around that at some point. On this edition of KVC Arts, it's been music from the Redcoats in conversation with bassist and vocalist Matt Bissonette, hearing a bit about and from their first and second releases, Redcoats 1 and 2. More at theredcoats.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Matt Bissonette, and here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Champ Chipman, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. Give any time of the year at kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.